Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Rick Shields. I'm here with producer Guy, and we have a guest today, which I'm excited about, because I feel like we've got, obviously, loads to discuss. I want to know and get right into the brain behind Peter Finch today.
All right.
Okay.
Shortest podcast episode for you guys.
I feel like we've got a number of things to address. A little bit of controversy last week, which sparked some flames and fires on social media, which we want to address as well. Where should we kind of start this? Where should we go with this guy?
We've obviously got to start with the elephant in the room, which is Peter Finch.
Don't be starting dropping that again.
No, that's the first thing, I think, because basically, obviously, last week, I'm sure people listened to this episode, listened to last week's as well, but there might be some people who didn't do. And again, I guess most people, everybody listening will know who Peter Finch is, but for the odd person listening, Pete, who doesn't know, which there won't be many of, obviously, but how would you explain yourself in a sentence or two?
Golf pro turned YouTuber, now content creator and zoo animal, apparently.
Yes.
That's pretty much where I'm at the moment.
So quite a similar story to Rick, and we probably will come on to that later on in the podcast, but the reason we obviously interviewed the elephant in the room was last week we... I think dissected would be the right word, your open qualifying for this year. And it went, the podcast went big. There was lots of comments. It was definitely our most commented podcast video.
Yes.
Maybe not for the right reasons. There was a lot of negativity, a lot of support for Pete, which you'll be glad to know about. So we wanted to go over that podcast episode, hear your take on things. Maybe we can slightly better articulate some of our points and see where it ends up. Okay. So the first thing I would like to say then, Pete, is jokes aside, I think what we try and do with the podcast is, as you'll see today, it is very unscripted. So we turn the mics on and we will spend an hour and a half talking about all sorts of things from golf to dominoes to...
Sometimes we do talk about golf.
Awesome.
Little bit of golf. Cool. And we don't edit anything out. It literally is what it is. And the problem with that is... Well, the benefit of that is it's authentic conversation.
Yeah.
The negative to that is that you sometimes listen back to it, which I do every time, and you say things that you either didn't mean to say or didn't say very well. So even a simple example would be I could be reading out a nightmare golf story or an email we've had sent in, let's say, and it might say, I hit my 7-iron and this happened. And sometimes I listen back and I'll have said 4-iron and I'll have said the wrong word. So you think, well, I don't know why I said that. But also you say things that might not be the best choice of word or phrases. So anyway, last week we got onto open qualifying and your score. And I started that section with the elephant in the room, which definitely on reflection wasn't my best piece of work, if you like, if that's the right phrase. And it did maybe start off like it was going to be very negative. So I would like to apologise to you for that, because maybe I should have said, so, Peter Finch played in it, not the elephant in the room. I don't really have a reason why I said that, but I did. And I can't take that back now. And tens of thousands of people have seen that and commented on that, which is fair enough. So, again, accept my apology on that. It probably did do your head in. I don't want to piss you off a little bit. However, my other points about your golf and stuff, I do stand by. I want to dig into that. Let's hear your take first, and let's go from there.
I think the main issue that, well, many people took issue with. I think whenever you describe something as an elephant in the room, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, it never starts off in a positive sense. So I think that was what a lot of people took a bit of umbrage with. But I think, like most things on social media, you know, there's going to be a scale of reactions, mm-hmm. and that kind of range from, you know, people who probably listened to it a little bit more closely, took the points, and people who jumped to my defense with a little bit too much enthusiasm, mm-hmm. I would potentially say. But at the end of the day, a lot of that is what happens on social media. If there's a dividing line drawn, people will take sides. And a lot of people did that, which, you know, it's something you can't control. Like, it's just going to happen no matter what you put out. I think the main thrust of what people were maybe a little bit put off by, and certainly which I probably took almost a little bit too personally in some respects, was when it was talked about how people who make YouTube videos and then go into competitions probably, I can't remember who said it, but think themselves better than they are and let on that they're better than they are, which almost tricks an audience mm-hmm. into following along with a journey under like a false pretense. And I think that was probably the main point, which was kind of raised by a lot of people, but also which kind of took a little bit more personally. Mm-hmm. And I think certainly with the Quest for the Open and stuff that I'm doing, you know, it's all very out there. I always post all my competition results, so people know exactly kind of how I'm getting on in competition. So I think that was what people were getting really mm-hmm. annoyed about. And again, too much and way too much.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was really interesting seeing people's reaction. I think people really do kind of maybe underestimate my comfort level talking about you and your golf. You know, we've known each other for many, many years, and it's nothing that I wouldn't kind of massively say to your face, or wouldn't say, you know, sometimes there are different levels. I fully expected this year you to post a number. And I'm sure you probably did as well going into it, because the way you were playing golf in the build up to it, the way you had your first professional win, which was the local tour event at Marsden Park, the way you were swinging it, the way you were hitting it, the numbers, you were starting to really see trends. I thought, this is it. This could be, Pete's going to post a number. He's going to get it through. And then it was like, on the back end, I was like, oh, like, what a shame. Like, frustrating, I'm sure, for you, for many people watching. And your support that you get is just phenomenal, regardless of whether you play good or bad, as I got as well when I was kind of doing it a little bit as well, which always surprises me. I always feel like when I had a bad round, I let people down. And I'm probably, are you of a similar kind of, have you seen that over the number of years, or has it become less phased now?
I think it's, I certainly don't feel like I'm letting people down. I think most people really appreciate when they watch this stuff that it is a journey about trying to get better at golf. The only problem with the Quest for the Open is, in the title and in the series, it has a very specific point in time where you have to shoot a good score to progress through open qualifying.
It's one round of golf. That's the build-up to regional qualifying.
Exactly. So there's this huge build-up, and then there's this one point in time where if you don't play well, then you don't get through. And it was just as simple as that, really. I just didn't play very well on the day. And it is unfortunate, but it's a case of, it's a difficult thing to explain in many respects, but, you know, I'd like the Quest for the Open stuff to be judged on the whole, you know, as a whole year, season by season, if you want to look at it like that. And that's probably more of a fair reflection about how you play, because, you know, everyone knows golf's a really difficult game. You can be playing amazing golf, and I've not been playing amazing golf, I've been playing okay, but if you have one bad round at the wrong time, then yeah, it's not going to be.
What's the famous saying? 1,000 good shots build confidence, and one shatter it. Really, doesn't it, in golf as well?
That is the thing, though, with professional sport, isn't it? It's like at the minute we've got the Euros on, and Gareth Southgate's done an amazing job. But if he had an amazing 6 month run in all the friendlies and lost his opening match 5-0, the journey's irrelevant to that degree. The point when it counts. So I can understand like what you're saying, it is a journey, and there's a lot of document that all year, and there's some really good pieces of content there. But from my perspective, last week, it was about the actual result on the day. And like you said, maybe that is because it's Quest for the Open. You look at that tournament result, don't you? One thing that seemed to really get people worked up, and I don't know how you interpreted this, was when I talked about how social media can be false, and a lot of people thought that I was saying you doctor your scores in vlogs to appear that you've played better than you have. I don't know how you interpreted that, but that wasn't what I was saying. What I was saying is that, like anything, like a Facebook profile picture, nobody puts on an ugly picture of themselves, do they? If you go on somebody's profile picture versus the tagged photos, we all look better in our profile picture. That's a fact.
Yep.
And, you know, with social media, and I again held my hands up, I do this, I actively still do this. If I put a swing video on YouTube, on Instagram, not on YouTube, I don't have YouTube, on Instagram, I make sure I put my best, prettiest swing on. Equally,
I suppose, like at the weekend when you had your lesson, you did your best driver shot.
100%, I did that on purpose.
The best distance, yeah. And everything else.
So again, I had a lesson at the weekend with Barry Taylor. Didn't hit it great. Hit one shot that went 287 carry, 300 odd total. Put it on Instagram, because that's what people do. A lot of people do. And I think the way people interpret it was that I had said you go out and play in on videos and your scores aren't real. And it's not that at all. But what I do think, and this is why I still believe that people often think the creators are better than they are, is because yes, you might post a result once every couple of weeks on your Instagram of how you've done in the pro-am or whatever it might be. But within that, there's probably most days a swing video, a long drive, a chip in, whatever it might be, that's pretty. Now, you must admit, you wouldn't necessarily put on a horrendous shank chip very often. You're going to put on your better ones more often than not, because that's just it's human nature. And I therefore think that people perceive online creators as being better than they actually are.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's difficult for me to put an ugly swing on it, because I've got an amazing swing.
So it doesn't work in comps.
I mean, I could go out to a range and I could try and get a bad swing. I'm not saying I'll be able to do that though. I mean, I think whenever you put anything on social media, certainly now, you know, I've got people who kind of help me out in that regard. A lot of the stuff that we put out on Instagram, not so much on Twitter, because I'm still looking after that, which, you know, I need to pass off as well. Just someone who knows what they're doing on it. But everything there is going to be content. So, you know, I've put bad swings and bad shots on there for a specific purpose, you know, to let people know that people do hit bad shots, and to tag their mates if they've hit bad shots, and to get that conversation going.
Yeah,
I'm in a position where, again, and I'll stand by this, one of the reasons I'm playing in comps is that there is a definitive measure of how good that golf actually is. So I can put out, you know, great looking golf swings on Instagram, Twitter, whatever it may be, and I'll always kind of do that in the build up to a comp, and then we'll see what happens in that comp. It's as simple as that. And I don't really think there's anything kind of wrong with that in many respects. You know, I won't shy away from putting good shots or bad shots on social.
And yeah. I completely agree, but you must then understand that people do then look at your good shots that you put on and think, like you said, he looks like he's playing well because of the shots and things that you see online.
Yeah, I always get this idea that, and I kind of feel very realistic with my golf, because I know where I sit with it, that I'm not that great. I'm okay, but I'm not brilliant, because I don't vouch to be, I don't practice loads, I don't put loads of time and effort in. I failed in competitions when I was playing in competitions, certainly towards the back end of it. It was interesting though, I look back at like when I kind of first started, even with you, 2015, 2016, and I actually could play in competitions. It kind of became a big thing for me as my audience grew, and I felt like I had more people who were responsible, or not responsible, maybe accountable or behind my journey. I found it too much pressure and kind of failed from that. And I've always tipped my hat to you for that idea, because to be able to put yourself out there and still post your comp scores, now you've got you've got in close to 1 million overall followers, are you, on all platforms?
I think
so. Like, it's a big audience to be able to kind of, at the end of the day, go, this is what I've done, this is what I've shot. I think it takes real courage. So I never would ever slag anyone off for that. I think for me, it's this idea that other people weirdly feel like I'm better. feel like I'm better than what I am. Like, I know people will come and see me at, let's say, the Marriott or whatever, and they'll go, oh, Rick, well done. You're like, plus one handicap, which I got recently. I'm thinking, right, it's good. Not really. It feels like it is, but on paper it is, but it doesn't always feel like that's actually how I'm playing golf. Like, for you, and this is a really interesting question, like, how good do you think you are? And how close do you think you are to getting to, like, the next level? And what is that level? I mean, you posted a video this weekend, which I obviously watched, saying that is this the final Open qualifying, which is a very nice title and thumbnail, by the way. And you've mentioned on there that you don't feel like you're quite there yet. Like, could you kind of dive into that a little bit more as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think quite a few points there. I think if we go from the first thing is you can't control how other people are going to perceive you. There's no point in trying to do that. So there's going to be people on social media who look at my swing, look at your swing, look at our games and say, oh, great golfer, oh, terrible golfer. And
what are you trying to say?
Well, this gets onto kind of like my next point. I mean, when you do look back at your comps when you were playing in them, yeah, you're a good player.
Yeah.
I think there's a definite difference in maybe how we perceive your golf performance and how I would perceive my golf performance.
Yeah.
I would look at your golf performance and say, you strike it well, need to work on your wedges.
Really?
It's been a consistent theme for about seven years now.
Let me just write this down.
But I look at your game and I think there's a good golfer there with lots of potential, yeah, if you can get over your nerves and not worry about what people would think if you posted, yeah, that score. You look at your golf game and I would, from the outset on what you've just said there, would go into a competition with more nerves about failing.
Oh, way more. Succeeding. Way more.
Now, if you do that, that's letting, again, other people's perception of your game actually stop you from competing.
Definitely.
And it's turned you now into someone who doesn't enjoy that environment.
Yeah.
And the fact is, like, playing in comps, especially when you are, when you have an audience, when you're posting results, it's difficult.
Yeah.
It's hard because it's not nice to turn around and say, oh, you know, I shot bad score, I didn't do what I wanted to do, you know.
Yeah.
But everybody reading that, if every single person from 10,000 people who would watch that comment, whatever it's going to be, 10,000 people, about 100 of those, if they're lucky, would have played well enough to win that week.
Yeah. Even on the net score, really. It's not, yeah, wouldn't have been on a gross score. Not many would probably beat your worst score, let's, yeah, say.
Exactly.
So where do you feel like...
People play golf and they lose all the time.
Way more than they win, obviously.
Yeah, there's nothing to be embarrassed about there.
Yeah.
So if I post a bad score, as long as I can learn from that, give something back to an audience, that's all that matters. It doesn't, yeah, matter if you shoot a bad score. No one is affected by it.
Yeah.
Like, no one's going to see you post a bad score and be like, oh, God, that's ruined my week.
I'm unsubscribing.
Yeah.
You don't get that. Oh, damn. Right. No, I've always had this idea, and we joked about it back in the day. Like, you'd either want to shoot 65 or 95 because there's a story there. Like, it's either I've shot the lights out, played amazing, or, you know what, I've actually had the worst round of my life because at least there's a story. Like, mid-70s doesn't do a great deal to a storyline, let's say.
Set fire to the course or set fire to yourself, one of the two.
Yeah, nice. Coming back to you, where do you feel like your game is now? And realistically now, this is what... Because you didn't do 15 because you were injured, did you?
Yeah, it's like...
The back end of 15, you first, did your wrist.
I think it was first year didn't, I think. And then I think it's been... This was the fifth year.
2016?
Yeah.
Yeah, 17, 18, 19, no 20, 21.
Yeah.
Okay. So currently right now, obviously you've put more time in. Do you feel like you had the best year this year as in preparation, getting yourself ready? Like, where do you feel like your game is? I'm really interested to know this.
I don't think this year was the best preparation in many respects. One of the things which I probably should have shared a little bit more, I think people could see because I was kind of wearing a wrist strap quite a lot, like just like wrist, back, body, slowly disintegrating after the years.
Do you feel like that was any fault of anything that you did either as well?
No, not really. I think it's just a case that certainly when I was younger, a lot of the practice I was doing, you know, off mats,
yeah,
mats on concrete floors, yeah, not off concrete floors. I'm not that northern. But also the fact that, you know, over the last, you know, 10, 15 years, I've just not looked after my body really at all. And that is a limiting factor as far as how much I can play in practice. And then obviously with trying to do all the content, it's not an ideal situation.
Yeah.
So that is part of the process, which I haven't figured out yet.
Well, come on, I'm going to hold you to this idea of where your golf is, but you just picked up on a point there, which again, I think was really kind of jumped on last year or last week, shall I say. Feels like a year ago already. This idea that I mentioned, can YouTubers play great golf when they're documenting it? Describe to the audience the challenges that you might face as somebody who's in the content creation world, but also trying to play at a professional level. Like, do you see that being quite a challenge on a daily basis?
Yeah, it's a massive challenge. It's a massive challenge in respects that where my golf is currently at as well is not where it needs to be to get through where I would ideally want to be as far as the quest is concerned, final qualifying. So regional qualifying, like my game at the moment, I'm more than good enough to get through that. I'm not worried about that. I just had a bad day, got away from me, and I just finished terribly. So I'm not worried about that. But even if a few things would have gone my way at West Lancs and I'd have got through to final qualifying, realistically, at the moment, would I have got through that? No.
What got through at West Lancs in the end for two rounds?
I think it was six or five.
Quick look. And it was outrageous.
Well, I know St. Anne's Old Links was something like 12, I think it was, in the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Some guy shot 9 under in the first round. So, yeah, so to get through to final qualifying, you got to be shooting 6 under par for two rounds of golf. Okay. So, I don't know why I was on there. Tell us about the challenges.
I mean, the easiest way to describe it is, and it's not a popular thing to kind of say, but one of the reasons is because what we do as far as, you know, we're involved in golfing every day, you know, podcasts, videos, you know, on the course, whatever it's going to be. It's amazing, but it's a lot of work. It takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
So if you do that, which is a full-time job, and then you're trying to basically compete against people who are treating their golf as a full-time job,
yeah,
I've got two full-time jobs.
Yeah.
And the only problem is with the professional playing side, you don't get paid for that.
Unless you win.
And the comps that I would win, have won, you know, I ain't going to be buying me yacht anytime soon. So it's a case of trying to just balance the two.
Don't mind me asking, how much did you win for your win this year that you got?
Oh, God, I don't even know. I think it's about 400, I want to say.
400 quid.
But to be fair, the actual money behind the comps that I play and I win, it sounds very kind of snooty, but it's not really the point for me.
Yeah.
Because I know that it's the content that I'm making around it, which is probably more important.
Yeah.
And if I was really, really worried about how much money I was making from it, then that would add more pressure that I don't really want.
Do you think, again, though, that's where, I think you went to social media, but like you said then that you don't get as much chance to play because you're creating content, but like Rick often gets, it appears to people online that you're always playing golf and always practicing and always hitting balls in your studio, which might not be the case, but because you see it on social media most days, it appears to people like you are practicing loads. And, you know, playing devil's advocate a bit, some of those guys that got the regional qualifying are full-time lads who work in a pro shop who don't get to play probably as much as you do. So there's also that. I mean, it's different at final because those guys at final are full-time amateurs, elite amateurs, or full-time golf pros. But at regional, a lot of the guys that got through are actually guys who have full-time jobs as well.
I mean, in the same context, you can flip it around and say, well, because they don't post much on social media, how much do you know they are practicing?
Well, yeah, but they have got 9-to-5 jobs, so.
I mean, I've got a 9-to-9 job, and I'm still trying to find time to do it. You shouldn't.
But your job is golf, isn't it? Your job's not sat in a pro shop. You're still hitting balls when you're working and you're out doing a video. You're still hitting golf balls and you're still practicing.
Yeah, of course. But I think if you're going to judge people by what they post on social media,
that's how we're going to judge you, though, isn't it? Because you are an online content creator.
Exactly. But you should also judge other players by what they're kind of not posting as well. You know, the fact is, a lot of the very best players, even if they are working at golf clubs, they'll be still putting their practice in. They're still putting the time in. They're just not posting about it. Like, posting about practice, posting about what I'm doing is natural to me. Someone who plays very good golf, they might not need to, might not want to. It's no skin off their nose. And also, there's a difference in the type of player that certainly I found out that I am compared to a lot of other people. I cannot go into a competition having 3 months off. It just doesn't work for me. I need constant competition to actually keep that, not exactly competitive edge. That's not the right way of looking at it. It's more the...
like a confidence
it's the control of nerves, basically. If I'm constantly playing in competitions, it's fine because I get used to it. If I have an extended period of time out, as soon as I get back into a competition, then that's when I get really nervous. And I know that that first comp back's always a bit of a write-off for me. It's just getting back into it. Where a lot of players who have had very good amateur careers, who've been good as a young pro, they can maybe raise the level of their game a little bit quicker than I can. But I'm going from a position where I was a okay golfer to a very mediocre pro to now a pro who's all right to someone who wants to get good. You know, it's just I'm going to have to practice more.
Makes sense. But you must also understand where I'm coming from, that your whole journey is documented online, on YouTube, on Instagram, etc. So when I then said that's how I perceive as a viewer or, you know, watching you online, that is only way we can is perceive what you're doing is by what you post on online. So it does appear that you do play a lot of golf because that's what we see online most days.
Yeah, of course. But again,
maybe that could be something that could be in the quest more. You know, you could maybe, not that I'm telling you what content to make for anyone says I am, but maybe you could somehow show more behind the scenes of the actual grind of producing the videos and managing staff. So people actually can realise that you aren't just playing golf every day. You have other aspects to your business that stop you from doing that, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, there's two sides to that. I don't think in many respects, and I might be wrong about this, but a lot of people are just going to watch for the golf, you know, whether that's course vlogs, whether it's equipment reviews, whatever it might be, and they're not really that bothered about kind of what we're doing behind the scenes. That's how I kind of see it.
I think they are. I think that video you did with the Open was unbelievable. And that showed much more of you with your dog, going out for a walk, at the gym. It showed Peter Finch... I don't say the real because you always are real, but like more behind the scenes. I think people would actually enjoy to see more of you.
Yeah, I think that's more of a decision I've probably made over the last couple of years because I certainly used to document it a little bit more like that. It's a case of saying, well, you know, I could document a whole day or I could just focus on what I'm trying to do and then film a select amount of time and hopefully produce a better amount of content out of that. So it's being a little bit more focused on what we're showing or what we're filming. So yeah, that is an issue. But again, like a lot of it has to come down to the person who's watching as well to kind of understand what's going on. I mean, I've had quite a few messages. I'm still posting videos that were filmed in Scotland, and there's people messaging me saying, "Oh, I see you're still in Scotland. Can you come for a game?" Which it makes sense if you watch that video and then haven't seen the videos prior to that. Then, yeah, that's fine. You'd look at it and go, oh, he's in Scotland. I'll give him a message.
That was 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And again, that's what it comes down to, how people digest social media. And like you said before about you do post all your comment results, and you do. I'll take my hat off to you. But John, who picks up his phone, might not have seen that yesterday and just sees you smacking a drive. Oh, God, Pete's ripping it up. It's like people don't see the whole picture. And I don't know, maybe those videos were, it actually shows what it's like to have a team and, you know, be really busy, not just playing golf. I think that would open people's eyes more.
It's, you know, and again, I think it's the misconception.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Of the audience can sometimes be a little bit false in the fact that it's not their fault, just how they digest information, like you're saying, that you do grind every day 12 hours a day and kind of forget the other factors that go into it. I mean, I must admit, back in kind of, was it a couple of years ago, I felt like you were doing almost weekly updates, or was it bi-weekly updates of everything that you've done, and I felt like that gave a really, really good representation of everything that kind of got involved. Where now, for the Quest for the Open series, is that when do you release kind of content around that? Is it a little bit more sporadic? How does that work?
This year, it's definitely been a little bit more sporadic in the sense that I want to try and make the videos a little bit more consistent, but also have a certain topic. So what we're going to try and do this year is whenever I've got a comp, so like next week I've got a few comps. So it's picking a subject, whether that's going to be driving, chipping, iron play, or equipment, or, you know, whatever it's going to be. Picking that subject, focusing around that subject, and how that translates into competition performance. So next week it might be, I think, maybe around a piece of equipment that I want to put in the bag, how to practice with that, and how that then performs in a competition, and use that as a vehicle to explain about what went in the comp and what went on that week to prepare. Because I think if you just do a video which is, this is my update from the week, it's fine, but there's no driving force behind it. And I think a lot of videos, certainly if you want to appeal to a wider audience, they need a certain subject for people to watch.
Yeah.
So I think with updates are fine, but like it's very easy to scroll past an update as well.
If someone misses it.
Do you sometimes feel this is a world that we completely live in? And I feel like I kind of might know the answer to this, but I want to put it forward anyway. Like, obviously with YouTube, and we're under no illusion, we are as bad as anybody, if you want to use that term. You have to think of titles, of thumbnails, and you want to keep the audience engaged, obviously, because we all want the views. That's true. That's not a negative. That's the fact of YouTube. But before, when you said about the Quest for the Open video, some of the more behind-the-scenes thing, do you almost get put off by that because you think it would appeal to a lesser audience? And you kind of feel that, like, somebody seeing you do an actual day-to-day thing could have real value, but it might only appeal to a smaller section. And that kind of, you think, well, I'm uploading today. I don't want to upload a video that's only going to appeal to a small amount of people.
Potentially. I think certainly, you know, this is very kind of YouTube-y, but, you know, when you have a look at what uploads actually work on YouTube, that's different to what would work on, say, an Instagram story or tweet and all the rest of it. So it's a case of saying, okay, so I want to try and update and document my progress. I've been doing that a lot more from a behind-the-scenes perspective on Instagram.
Yeah.
And that seems to be okay. Whereas on YouTube, if you put one of those videos out a week, it probably wouldn't do that well.
Yeah.
And what that does is that kind of puts a bit of a block in the way of other content that you could be putting out, which 100%. Would do better. And, you know, the reality is now I've got three guys kind of working for me, doing a great job. We need to make sure that they have the material to actually work with. And if it's a video which we know is going to do amazing versus a video which is, oh, here's me grinding for a few hours at the range every day, that's going to get put on the side.
I respect that. That's completely fair. It's like a similar analogy. And this is what sometimes, obviously, I love YouTube. We all do. It's given us all a job and stuff. I can't speak bad of it. But what sometimes upsets me a little bit, and I'm sure you feel the same, is you can make a really good piece of content because it's not got a good title or thumbnail. It doesn't do that well. So like some of the Break 75 videos that we've posted have been actually better than others, but because there wasn't a massive kind of selling point to that particular episode, it's not popped. Whereas when like something bad goes wrong or there's something like at JCB with a really significant par three that's 255 yards, that gets more clicks. And that is just the nature of the beast, isn't it? Yeah. Sometimes you make a really lovely piece of content and because it's not got a really strong title, it doesn't get the views. And it is harsh, isn't it, really?
Well, that side of it is the biggest challenge of content creation. Like, it's got to be fresh, it's got to be different, it's got to be attracting people's attention, because like you're saying now as well, you've got responsibilities, you've got three members of staff, you've got to be making good uploads, and you want to grow. Like, you want to get to the 500,000 mark, you want to get to 1 million mark, and it's those like goals that you keep driving forward that probably will dictate content sometimes. Mm-hmm. I say, it feels in. I've got
one more question on this, and I think we'll just move on to other more lighthearted stuff. Well, two more questions, actually. Realistically, honestly, Pete, I want your honest opinion now. From when we spoke on the podcast last week, did you truthfully feel like we were saying you should quit?
It certainly gave the impression on the pod that it was, if you kind of lumped in all the other kind of YouTubers, content creators who were playing, that you're at a level. Know your level. People are better than you, so why are you even trying? Mm-hmm. That's how it really came across. And people who certainly play in competitions, you can understand why they take it personally. You can also understand why people who want to watch videos of competitions or want to watch people improving would also take that personally. Because what you're saying is, why bother? Mm-hmm. What's the point? Do something else. Whereas I certainly feel you've got to put yourself in those situations and in those competitions to learn about yourself, to learn about your game, and to ultimately improve.
Yeah.
You know, there are players who are definitely better than me in the local region, national level, you know, and certainly going into open qualifying. But the chances of me improving to that level are literally going to be zero unless I'm competing with them and trying to learn how to get better.
No. Just quickly on that then, one set. If that's how it came across, that, it's not what we intended.
No.
And I even said that I think you should do it every year, because why would you not? I think what I was meaning, and I'll hopefully try and do it in a more articulate way, I may well stumble up again, wasn't so much that you should stop and that you're not good enough, you should quit. It was just more a case of, I mean, if you had, and there's a lot of comments, people saying, oh, you shouldn't tell people to give up on the dream, and that's not it. It's just more about having things that are realistic, achievable, like a smart goal. So, for example, if you had a guy come in for a lesson tomorrow, I know you don't coach so much, but let's just say, and he's a nice, solid 15 handicapper, and he said, I want to be off scratch in 6 months. You wouldn't say that's not going to happen, but you'd probably be realistic and say it might not happen. There's obviously been cases where it has, I'm sure, and people might comment below with examples where it has. Might not be that realistic. So for me, it wasn't so much that I don't think you should do it. It was possibly more that maybe if it was more like the goal was actually just to get through regional for 1 year, that is more, I think you could do that. I think it's realistic. I think that, like, even now, and it's great that you've got the support, people are saying, come on, Pete, one more go, get to St. Andrews next year. Go for it, of course. Not that you need my blessing, obviously, but it still doesn't feel, in my opinion, realistic. I think the realistic goal is more like get through regionals next year and get to final and see what happens, personally, because, but again, I'm probably going to get shot down.
Yeah, no, I didn't think you should quit. 100%, I think you should continue to do it, obviously. And all the other content creators that are doing it, I know James Wiltshire had a little bit of a dig. He wasn't happy with what we said. And it wasn't the fact we shouldn't be doing it. I think making content around the subject, like I say, there has been crazy examples where pros have got into the Open that have gone from regional to final qualifying. For me, it was more just getting this idea, like, at the moment, I think you're one of the best golfers that I know. How close are you, or how close do you feel like you need to get to, or what's the realistic pathway to get to, like, shooting 5, 6, 7 under all the time, which is probably the numbers realistically you need to be shooting to try and get through to obviously regional qualifying, not so much, but final qualifying. Like, do you have a pathway or a journey to try and get to those kind of goals, numbers? I mean, the one thing that I've always thought, and I'd love to know your take on this as well, obviously you support the local PGA competitions. At the moment, are they a good enough benchmark, or should you be playing in bigger competitions? Like, is there, I don't know. Is there bigger competitions where the competition is more fierce, where there's 120 really good golfers week in, week out? Does anything like that even exist?
I think from a competition standpoint, so the local PGA events now, there's actually some really good players in there. So there's ex-tour pros, there's people with really good careers in there.
Do you think the courses are hard enough at those events?
Some of them are, yeah. I mean, it's very different, though, because like at some of the courses that, let's say, you know, the mini tours play on, a lot of those are probably better suited to my game because they're longer, a bit wider. And
I could just what do you mean by the mini tours?
So you're like your Jamaica tour. Okay. I was going to say Euro Pro, but that's obviously a little bit of a better standard.
Is a clutch tour, is that one of them?
Yeah, I know.
Is that down south, though? Clutch tour.
There's Clutch 2020.
Yeah.
And there's a few more, to be fair.
Yeah, 1836, does that still exist?
Yes, it does, yeah. Okay. But I've not looked into those enough. Yeah. And for me, the local PGA events as well, they're actually well spaced out enough.
Yeah.
You know, because at the end of the day, if I want to play in a, let's say, three-day event, let's say Euro Pro Tour, for example, that's a three-day event. In reality, you're going to be traveling one day, at least one day for a practice round.
Yeah.
That's going to be 4 days. Mm. And if you make the cut, it's three rounds, isn't it? Yeah, if you make the cut, it's like 4 to 5 days, basically. Yeah. So that's your full week gone. So, and I wouldn't be able to film that while I'm playing. So for me, it's a non-starter straight away. And to be fair, the local PGA events have probably a better setting for me to try and get through open qualifying. Because you go to an event, it's a one day, it's regional qualifying. Okay. You just got to figure out how to shoot a good score on that day.
There is some good names. You said Ryan O'Neill. I saw Dave Shacklady. There's a lot of guys in there who are serious players that you can compete against, to be fair.
Yeah, Phil Archer, yeah. You know, European Tour pros. And you know, if I can consistently get up around the top of the leaderboard in those events, then I think that's a good benchmark to set myself. Mm. And the fact is that if you go to the mini tours, there's a lot of amazing players on there who are trying to make it to the tour. I'm not trying to make it to the tour. If I play in a four-round event, that is an exceptional novelty for me. And I don't need to be good at four rounds.
Yeah,
I need to be good at one round when I need to be. And then if I get through to final qualifying, I need to be good over two rounds.
You've explained that really well, and that makes a lot of sense. It really does. The fact that it's a shootout, basically, you're going for. Like these one-day events at PGA, they're a shootout. You're trying to shoot 400, 500, 600 to try and win it, obviously. Do you think then, and again, this kind of goes two ways. If you played in those four-day events, mm-hmm. Do you think that would get you into a mindset of preparation that would make you then so good at one-day events? Like, do you think there'd be any benefits playing in these four-day events? Like, knowing that, okay, I can go out and shoot a 66, I can go out potentially the next day and shoot a 71 because I've not been swinging it that well or whatever it may be. I've had a bad third day and I need to go out on the final fourth day and shoot a 66 or whatever to win it. Do you think having those four opportunities to play competition rounds in consecutive would help you in the one-day events?
Potentially. I mean, it's one of those things where I just don't know.
I would say it wouldn't, because I think what you're doing, regional qualifying, is a one-day event. You want to get shit hot at playing golf over 18 holes. So the 18-hole ones probably are the best thing to be doing.
Do you think that courses are then tough enough? Again, I've mentioned that. Like, obviously, West Lancs is ridiculously hard. Like, I know it. It's outrageously hard golf course. The rough is brutal. It's long. It's tight. Like, never mind the weather conditions and things like that. Yet, when I do see the local events, and I've not played every single of the ones locally you've played in, like, they aren't that test, are they, really, would you say? Am I wrong? I'd love.
There's a few, like, say, where I actually won the event kind of this year at Marsden Park.
Yeah.
It's a course up in Burnley near where the studio Quest Golf Academy used to be. And on the face of it, you look at the card and you think, oh, it's like 6,400 yards, you know, it's fine. But when you actually play it, it's hard.
Is it fiddly?
In what way?
Or
tight,
like,
and fiddly?
It's tight, it's fiddly, it's undulating, there's loads of out-of-bounds everywhere. Because, you know, when you play a shorter course, and you see this all the time, like, there's a lot of pro events that go to a shorter course, and you think, oh, they're going to tear it up.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, the scores there are actually higher than if they were playing a 7,000-yard course. Because they're shorter, they're tighter, the greens are small and undulating. It's a different challenge. And I think with any comp, like, literally any comp, you've
the roof's coming
down. I was going to say, I got my thunder. I think with any comp, you've literally just got to play that course that you find on the day.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I'm going into a course which I think is easy, but then I'm not able to produce that score, that's probably more worrying than not producing it on a hard score.
You know what? I think I'm going to say something now. I think my mind's been changed. My mind's been changed on one thing, basically. So going into this, I'll be honest, and kind of what I said last week was that, you know, you've got a personal trainer, you've got all access to all the best gear, you've got your studio with your GC quad, etc. That you've got a massive advantage over most of the guys that are entering regional. And in some ways, I still think that, but I think my mind's getting changed more, which I should have already known, in fact, but, you know, my mind's getting changed. The fact that actually you probably don't play as much golf as I thought. You know, you have got a team of staff. You are making content for YouTube like what we do. And actually, a lot of your time is spent watching other edits or just looking after staff or whatever it might be, thinking of ideas, creating thumbnail titles, doing other ventures. That actually, you probably, in some ways, are at a disadvantage to some of the competitors. And like you said, the guy that works in the pro shop, yeah, might be working 9 to 5, but just jumps outside and hits some balls and, you know, might not have three, four staff to be kind of thinking about and monitoring and stuff. So I definitely think that from this conversation, my mind has changed to that actually you probably don't play as much as I thought you did, and that you're not, in some ways you have got an advantage, but actually you've got a disadvantage in some ways as well.
It's a situation that I find myself in, which is an amazing situation, and I just need to manage it better. It's as simple as that. You know, I've got a limited amount of time in the day, but I could be getting up a lot earlier. You know, I could be training before the day even begins. Like, I have a normal kind of work day doing what we do, and then I could practice afterwards. Mm. It's just about getting my kind of diary and getting my timings in order and managing that better. It's the business that we're in, though, and the situation that we're in, it is quite fluid. You know, things come up all the time. You've got to do this, you've got to do that. And it's managing that, which is the difficult thing for me. Mm.
It goes back to my point that I did raise in the podcast. Can podcast, can a YouTuber be good enough to kind of do it? And it's probably because I see what a YouTuber has to do.
A one-man band, I think, could. A guy that is literally either a single guy or whatever it might be who is really good at golf, who wants to document it, that will happily spend till 2 a.m. editing, that's got no commitments, possibly could.
But it's time. Like, a lot of time goes into the film, into the editing. Like I said, it's a one-man band.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I meant, and you did, I know, when we were at Trafford, we used to stay up so late at night editing on our own, trying to get the videos out for the next day. It's like, I was knackered the day after. Like, almost, your body was drained. I just think it's a big challenge when, like say, you're trying to make YouTube content, so that dictates what content you release already. You then got to balance that content with trying to make, and I'm not saying you, I'm saying YouTube golfers as a whole, why it's more challenging. I do really believe this. I'm almost trying to be more in defense for YouTube golfers because I know how hard it is. And then the pressures of the audience, like, that does have an effect on people's ability to play golf. In my personal opinion, from what I found, whether it's, I don't know if you find it, like, midway through a round, if I was having a good round or a bad round, I was already drafting what my Instagram post was going to be that afternoon. Do you do that?
I'm getting better at not doing that.
But
definitely. But
it was, I know, there, wasn't it?
I know exactly what you mean. But I think with what you were saying there about, you know, being a bit nervous about your audience, at the end of the day, I know my audience from the messages that I have and the people who contact me. You know, there's people who are watching the Quest for the Open videos who are, you know, they're a school teacher, but they're studying to be a cook, whatever it's going to be. You know, yeah. There's people who have full-time jobs, have full-time families, who want to change what also they're doing to try and live the life that they want to live.
Yeah.
And watching stupid golf videos about practice and competition seems to give people a little bit of inspiration in what they're doing. And
you know what? I quite like how you said that. That kind of... It makes sense, actually.
Yeah,
and factored that in.
And again, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Golf. This is golf. It really, 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 really
that,
doesn't
Pete.
Matter.
it's a life.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. And at the end of the day, all I want to be able to do is turn around to myself in 20, 30 years, if I make it that far, and just be like, you know what? You gave that a good go, and you did well there.
How many years though? Can you say now? How many times do you think is this forever? Have you got a time frame? Have you got an end goal? Does the goal change? I'm just intrigued to know. You might want to keep this under your hat, but have you got a plan, or is it just each year I'm going to take it as it comes along?
I think it's reassessing each year. I think next year, with it being the 150th Open at St Andrews, it's just, that's a beautiful kind of sentence just to even think about. So it's definitely going to be kind of carrying on to the next year. But I think moving forward, even if it's not a quest for the Open, it might be something, it will be something else to do with playing, because I'm quite old fashioned really in my mentality, as far as if you're a pro golfer, you should keep your game in shape, try and improve playing competitions. And that is, I think that's like across the board for me.
Yeah.
Even though it's hard if you are spending 50 hours a week
I think
in the shop,
it depends like. On I mean, a pro golfer or a golf pro, doesn't it? Because if I see someone's a professional golfer, I think they make their money from playing golf professionally. Yeah. Whereas a golf pro, if you have a pro shop or have a custom fitting business, or you're a golf psychologist who's done his PGA, do they have to be as good at, do they have to still play?
I think they should.
Really?
I think they should. Not because, you know, they want to achieve a playing goal, but certainly when I was coaching full time and I was then playing in events around that, it gave me a much better appreciation of what golfers actually go through. You know, playing golf is hard. And if people come in for a lesson and you're, you know, coaching them, and certainly this happened at Trafford a lot, I was coaching people, they were getting technically better, but then they were coming back in and saying, oh, I didn't actually play well in the comp. Mm. And I was personally thinking, well, why? Why haven't you played well in the comp? You're swinging it better. He must not be trying harder.
There's more to golf than being in the bay, isn't there, at the range? 100%.
And then when you actually play in competitions and you test yourself, you learn, again, like how hard it is. You get an appreciation for people trying and working. I think that's important. But it's obviously difficult. It's obviously difficult to do. You know, it's difficult to be a pro working full-time, doing YouTube, for example. Doing YouTube, and then if you're a full-time range pro, if you're a coach, if you're working full-time in a shop, if you're custom fitting, to then say, ah, right, well, I'm going to carve out time to play in a comp. Mm-hmm. It's not easy to do.
I think it's a financial thing as well.
Oh, like, yeah, 100%.
Because a day out of a busy teaching diary, which is guaranteed, like when we were at Trafford, 6 days a week coaching, I was doing like 60, nearly 70 hours of coaching a week. For me to take a day out of my diary to go and play in the competition just made zero sense to me, because obviously you end up losing money for that, don't you, really? Because unless you win it, but even if you win it, there's no guarantee you're going to make as much money as you would have done. No. Like, there almost needs to be, like, in a weird way, the only way you could almost do it is if every pro, you wouldn't be able to do this in a million years, but if they were almost a bit like when you were assistant, you had to do 7 playing events throughout the year. Mm-hmm. If that was still a setting that you had to do to keep your PGA qualification for the rest of your life. But again, I don't know how you'd
factor
it. It's
got to depend on what you're doing. I mean,
oh, no, I get that as well.
Like, not... you said, as a coach, it might have some merit, but like as a custom fitter or something where it's about like stats and facts and right what's in front of you, does it matter if you shot 75 last week or 85?
And what's mad is even some of the best golf coaches in the world aren't great players.
Oh, no. Like,
well, is that the analogy? Nobody could coach Dustin Johnson if that was the case, could they? Because exactly. They're not better than him.
So, like, I'm sure, you know, there are many, many golf coaches. A lot of the golf coaches that coach on tour have been players, and they've played out on tour at some point in their life or whatever. But you don't have to be a great player to be a great coach.
Of course you don't.
So I think the swings and roundabouts. I'm not in the mindset that you need to play in competitions to continue to be a golf pro. But I know a lot of people kind of have that idea as well.
Do we feel like we've rounded all that up quite nicely? Have you got anything else you want to add?
Do you want to get anything off your chest, Pete?
No, not particularly. I think that's kind of summed everything up pretty
so,
well.
So to summarise it, I don't think you should quit. I think you've got to try and continue to shoot frigging 6 under. I'd love to see you try and compete in some bigger tournaments, but I know that's coming up because you've got the English PGA coming up soon.
Yeah, that's in a couple of weeks.
Like, I'd love to see how you're going to get on with that. definitely, without question, we did not accuse you of editing your content on YouTube. It was more taking the snips and making it look like you were a good golfer on social media.
Which everybody does.
Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. That's kind of what snippets, almost a little snippet of how you're playing. I think you're trending in the right direction. I'm intrigued to see how your content... I think with the Crest of the Open, and again, you have to take our advice, or I think they could be a little bit more... What's the right word?
Almost like a holistic view of your life, I'd say.
Yeah, just a bit more like... I know you mentioned this idea of trying to teach the audience what you've learned from your rounds. Could you do that more? Because I know you mentioned in the video you just said there, you released this weekend, talked about to the audience. I don't think I did a good enough job at telling people what I learned in my round of golf. And it's even like final qualifying, like I'd love to, if you've just been candid straight to the camera, this is what I learned about shooting 79 at regional qualifying this year. Mm-hmm. And really kind of, I think you'd get so much love back from that. I like to say, it's that balance between what's the biggest views videos. But I do think having that, like, because there's little things. Nobody really knew about your wrist injury until a couple of days before, really a week or so before. You change your putter before regional qualifying, which no one knew about unless there's a video coming about that soon. I think there's so much more that, and people are desperate to know. Like, people would lap that stuff up. So, yeah, it's just my little two pence on that.
Yeah. Well. No, it's right. And I think, yeah, we've been having kind of talks about how we can do that better. Because it is the case that, certainly what I want to do, and we did this at Open Qualifying, so there's going to be another Road to the Open video coming out where there was basically a camera team following me around the whole round.
Really?
Just quickly, for people listening, this is not a Pete video. This is an Open video that they're documenting you. So it's separate. I feel like they stole the idea a little bit off you, I'm honest. Did you not copyright that?
I don't want to say anything to us.
Yeah, it's just say Road to the Open, Quest to the Open.
You're like, hold on. But it's their Open, I suppose.
You know what? Yeah, I should have taken them to task about using Open in their video.
How dare you use Open?
Could they do that?
They might have been able to hold you to ransom for that.
Yeah, a little bit.
But no, genuinely, I love seeing when you've shot great scores. You know, the fact that you had a hole in one this year, the fact that you had your frigging first professional win, it's definitely trending in the right direction.
We're not ending it now, though, are we?
Keep doing it. No, I'm just
waiting. You've stayed for a bit.
I want to end that.
You don't have to.
You don't have to. We'd like you to. No, I was thinking, because basically, Pete, you might not know this, but we've had an issue with our podcast on Apple where, when for some reason, once it goes over an hour, they start to like not show up in the feed for days and ends. So how far in are we, Harry? 55 minutes in.
No, so really?
Maybe we could do like another, this could be at the end of part one, maybe, that can go out on Tuesday. And we can, because we've got a couple more questions to answer, like people saying, have you two fell out and stuff? So maybe
pop that into it.
And also, we've got loads of questions for you on Facebook.
Boxing fight?
I think Pete would probably have you.
What?
Yeah. We'll come on to that in part two. We're just trying to make things so people click on to part two, so we're going to keep going.
It's not our first rodeo. So if you want to hear in part two, I'm going to preempt the biggest argument you're ever going to see or hear. Stay tuned for part two.
Red Monster versus White Monster, which is a better drink.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for your time, Pete. Hopefully we've cleared the air and people understand where we were kind of getting from. And I think, you know what? I definitely have changed my idea on a few things. I know you mentioned you have. And it was nice to sit down. We probably should have done this Monday. Rang you up and said, tell us everything about it, but albeit that's what's happened. Guys, thanks for listening. Episode number
80 something, whatever.
We'll see you. Should we do Friday next episode?
Little Friday treat always goes down well.
We'll hear you on Friday for part two of the interview with Peter Finch.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.